love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey. Oh, I love you. Love to eat turkey, 'cause it's good. Love to eat turkey like a good boy should, 'cause it's turkey to eat. So good.
Hey everybody, welcome to a very special Thanksgiving episode of the Sal and Bob Show.
Thanksgiving, Bob.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thanksgiving week, I should say. It's still a ways off, but we just heard Adam Sandler's Thanksgiving song. You're familiar with that, aren't you, Bob?
Yeah.
Who isn't?
Yeah. The goofball song of probably, it's got to be more than 20 years ago now, and probably made $100 million for Adam.
Never saw any really financials on it, but he originally did it on the Weekend Update show on Saturday Night Live with actually Kevin Nealon.
Yeah.
That's the one you just heard. But he recorded it live at the Strand in Redondo Beach on July 25th, 1993. And you got to believe people have been listening to that song every Thanksgiving for years.
It's like on our the Halloween episode. It was the Monster Mash.
Yeah.
It's a perennial favorite.
It's just a good song.
I love that phrase.
And that's in 93. I was in his wheelhouse when he could have sang the phone book. People would have loved it. So good for Adam. Comedian that made it like a Tim Allen kind of made it, you know?
Oh, he...
Millions and millions and millions of dollars.
I'm going to say, Sal, that Sandler may be the most successful SNL alumnus. I read somewhere that he's worth $400
million. $400 million. Now, let's face it. The guy made some great movies. I'm not going to die. But, boy, did he make some stinkers, too, where he just collected a paycheck. You know, it's like us doing a bar gig in the middle of nowhere with five people in the audience, and we walk out of there with, like, $200 going, all right, well, I robbed this place tonight. But Sandler's doing it with a $20 million paycheck on Little Nicky and stuff, you know.
And he's producing the movies, and he's, I don't know if he distributes them, but he's managed to squeeze the cash out. And I like Adam Sandler. This is not a criticism.
No.
I think he's hilarious.
He exceeded his own expectations, as they say.
Yeah, I would think so.
I don't know if he dreamed of being, you know, a $400 million guy when he was born in Brooklyn, New York, which takes us to where we're at. So this is a Brooklyn, New York
kind of day. Great segue.
Right, Bob?
Yeah, I dragged you here.
To Peter Luger's, which isn't a bad place to go, but you came out here with me to kind of purchase a vehicle today. Do you want to talk about Peter Luger for a little bit, and then we'll get into why we're here? Yeah. All right.
This is, you
told me about this place. I had looked it up. I know it's like one of the best restaurants in the United States, steakhouses. But it's not like a huge place. It's not like, you know, it's got a great history and... What do you know about it?
It's not known for its ambiance. You know, this is not a plush kind of place like we were over Halloween when it's not like Jeff Ruby's.
Yeah, it doesn't have a million-dollar chandelier.
No, and you don't need it for this place.
No,
it's the food is fantastic for my money, and the reason why we came is I wanted you to experience this. This is the best steakhouse in New York, maybe the country. So it's great to be here. This is in Brooklyn, 178 Broadway. If you're in the neighborhood, come on by. This has been around since 1887. And I mean, it's got such a history to it. It's been ranked as one of New York's top steakhouses since 1984.
Yep.
And it's got a lot of unique things going forward. I mean, we're going to be talking about your car purchase later.
Yeah, that's...
Tell us what's unique about how you buy your food here at Peter Luger.
I love that. There's a bar in Dearborn, Michigan that's famous for burgers, Miller's.
And that's
cash only. And I always liked that. So when we came here and the, you know, first thing out of the waiter's mouth is we're cash only, I thought, This is Brooklyn. This is great. I want to order their most expensive steak and pay in fives at the end. I would get a kick out of that. But it's cash only here, so there's got to be, you know, people having $1,000 bills here. And
huge wads of cash.
There's no MasterCard sign here, man. You're paying with hundreds or. God, the freaking mafia guys that have had to eat in here over the years. This place is great.
It is. I love it. And we've been reminded of the cash only at least six times. The signs, the waiter tells you. The guy with the water comes by and says, it's cash only.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. He doesn't really.
I wonder if any time it's ever happened where just a couple racked up an $800 bill and then the guy puts a Visa on the thing and just totally has no cash.
Oh, it had to happen.
What does that guy do? Does that guy get the shit kicked out of him in the back and roughed up? But, hey, you didn't see that we were cash only for the eighth time today?
Yeah, how could you not see that? I don't know. I don't know what happens to that.
I'm kidding. They don't do that here.
They wind up in a swamp in Jersey, maybe. I don't know.
I guess there's an ATM that has a minimum, they charge you $29.95 to pull out. $300. They got to have an ATM here. I didn't check.
Yeah, three guys pick you up by your elbows, lead you to the ATM. What's your PIN?
What's your... Anyway, it's a cash only. I love it. I love that part of it. But it's... If they could just serve steaks here, I think they would. They don't even need to have sides here.
No,
they do. But if it was their choice, I think they would just put a steak on your plate.
And probably.
But yeah, we're in the heart of Brooklyn, man. This is a great place if... If you've never been here, do yourself a favor. You go to New York to see a play or something like that. Go to Peter Luger's, man.
Oh, yeah. And make sure you have reservations a few days in advance because there are nights it really doesn't matter how much cash you got in your pocket. If there's no seats, there's no seats.
No. Yeah, seats. This location seats 60, and then they have one in Long Island that seats 65. So yeah, you're
very, very small place.
Yeah, so... really cool. And it's got a great history and stuff. I mean, you can read about it. It's kind of got a longer story, but it was bought out by a gentleman, Saul Foreman, and just a really cool story about how he kind of rejuvenated and kind of reinvented this place.
It was a bowling alley.
It was a bowling alley back in the day. And so it's been kind of through the ringer back in the day, but now it's... very established and very nice, and people come from all over the country to have a steak here. So,
and I like the gravy boats. Did you see the gravy boats on the table we walked by?
Yeah.
I was pointing at them. I didn't want to be rude, but the gravy boats and the onion bread. I don't think they would like it if you just came in here and ordered gravy and bread, but. that's some serious dipping, Sal.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing some dipping.
And then it looks like they got, I'm a dessert guy. They have, it looks like here, they have an unbelievable, is it chocolate cake or something, sir?
Yeah, they got that.
Oh, the Holy Cow Hot Fudge Sundae. So yeah. I'm gonna dabble with that after I get
it. I may get that, too. But, and by the way,
I got to check my cash.
I don't want to have any embarrassing moments.
Is my bookie in here? If my bookie's in here and the Lions cover, I think I can get a side.
They won't cover, Sal. They never cover.
I know. What am I doing?
Most frustrating team in all of professional sports.
I actually thought about taking Buffalo the other day against New England. They were getting 14 points.
Yeah.
I actually thought about that when New England won 25-6. I mean, it was just so
much.
You gamblers out there, don't bet on Buffalo.
And
another New York
City.
Don't
bet on Detroit. They
have Detroit and Buffalo.
You will
never be able
long.
To eat at Peter Luger's if you bet on Buffalo
no.
and the Lions.
Or the Lions.
Or the Jets. Or the Giants, for that matter. I guess. Stay away from all New York football teams.
Yes. But do come to Peter Luger's restaurant. And there's one last thing. I think this is kind of interesting. They have their branded chocolate gold coins. They give you those with the check.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting
that's
those.
To remind you of cash.
It's cash only.
Right, because it's coins.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll just pay in rolls of quarters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I appreciate you making the trek to Brooklyn, New York with me for not only to go to Peter Luger's, but you kind of came with me so that I can meet my cousin Rocco
to talk about looking forward to that.
See, getting a new car, and you were intrigued by my cousin Rocco. He's from Binghamton, New York. I'm originally from Binghamton, New York, and
yeah.
I have a bunch of relatives up there that still live up there, and Rocco's one of them. He's my cousin, and he sells cars. He's been selling cars out of his garage for 40 years.
And he's not in cement. He's selling cars.
No, he's not in cement. Right. He got into the car, but this guy drives to, like, Mannheim is the name of the auction sites, and he goes there. He's got an eye for cars. If he sees a nice car coming down the line, and he's probably got eight blue books in his back pocket or whatever, and he looks them up, and if the car's, you know, going for $5,300 and he sees that he can get $8,000 for that car,
yeah,
he buys that car.
Okay.
And then he brings like one of these retired Binghamton guys that's like a driver for him, and that guy drives the car back for him for like $100. And one day Rocco's funny because he's like, yeah, well, if I don't buy a car, that guy has no job. He's just got to come back with me. I'm like, so you don't even pay the guy? We get him lunch or something. We put a couple of glasses of wine down his throat. He's happy. I'm like, that is all. You're a reality show.
He goes all that way, and he pays him a glass. But it sounds like when we had our pal Nate Armbruster on a couple months ago, he was telling a story about how you paid him in Arnold Palmer out of the trunk of your car.
Yeah, I was working for Arizona.
When he was just a young up-and-coming comedian.
Sure. Yeah, I would just pay guys in tea or, you know, give them $25 in a case of tea. That's pretty funny. Yeah, Nate always talks about that. But yeah, so you're going to meet my cousin Rocco. We're going to look at a car that I'm looking for. I got all my relatives sell cars. You know, my cousins or my nephew sells cars. Here in Michigan, my brother's been dabbling in cars. Brocco's brother Fred sells cars. If I need a car,
you're covered.
I'm covered.
But here's the thing: I've heard your family is cash only.
Yeah, cash only. That's all they are. I mean, yeah, come on. You kidding me? You think you're gonna give a guy named Rocco a check?
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting him. I'm looking forward to seeing the car, too. Do you have any idea what you're going to get?
I don't know. He said he got a couple of options from Mannheim at the auction. And there's actually a Mannheim in Monroe, Michigan, too. And he's like, hey, you can use my badge and go down there and take a look at some cars. He said that to me one time.
Really?
Yeah. I'm thinking about doing that one time. Have you ever been to a car auction?
No,
where they
never
just
have.
Come? You've seen them on television.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, those are really, really nice cars coming down the line. And you know, some rich guy from Texas is buying something right off the line for $100,000. Yeah. That's not this, but it's, you know, it might be a 98 Chevy going down the line that you're going to try to get. You know, you might steal that car for like $700. It might be worth $1,000, you know?
Walk out of it. What a great
But that's
great
what that's
business,
what he
man.
Does. He details them in his garage. Now he works at a casino. He's a dealer at a casino, believe it or not. So he does that.
No, I absolutely believe that. Cousin Rocco, who sells cars casually.
He has no idea I'm talking about him right now.
At the casino. I can't tell you how much I love this.
Oh, he's great, man.
And,
he's great.
So any of these cars that he buys, do they have to call the wolf to have them cleaned up?
He's got a detail system in his garage, so he details his cars up.
Okay.
And I've talked to him because, you know, when my uncle died, he came to Detroit for the funeral, and he stayed at my place, and we like literally stayed up all night because I was so intrigued in his business, you know. And we talked, and he's like, yeah, you know, I you know, he said one year he bought like 56 cars.
Wow.
You know, he had it all down, and he knew how much he made on each car. Yeah. And it's a living. It's a job. And you don't have to go punch a clock. He ain't working for anybody.
Good for him, man.
He's been doing it forever.
Yeah.
You know?
This is going to be an interesting day.
Yeah. So, Rocco, if you're listening, thanks for being who you are. Rocco. They're great. Binghamton, New York is great. That's where I'm from, you know.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I spent my younger years.
Is that on the water? I'm geographically challenged.
No, it's not on the water. Well, there's a river there, but it's not like Atlantic Ocean or whatever.
Yeah.
That's more
New York. The lake.
This is called upstate New York, which I don't understand upstate New York. Everything is upstate New York. You know what I mean? Like, if you're not in the city, everything
city
is upstate.
Yeah.
So, you know. But, Yeah, so you're going to meet Rocco. We're going to have a nice steak. What did you order today, Bob?
I went really simple here. I went for the porterhouse because that's the thing that everybody told me to get. And it's, you talk about simple. It's a dry-aged porterhouse cooked with nothing but butter, salt, and pepper.
Wow.
Boom. Done. And we did bring a bunch of cash for the car. So I don't know. Are you still up for getting that Opus?
Let's do it.
As an after-dinner wine? Because we kind of went budget. We got the Coppola.
I got the cash.
Okay, you know? Cool.
No credit cards are accepted at either Brooklyn or Great Neck locations. Credit card payments are only accepted for online ordering. I just noticed that on this one little piece of literature they have.
They don't want to pay the, what is it, 2% Visa?
Yeah,
they don't want that.
They don't want to pay Visa, Bob.
I don't blame them.
There's no reason to pay Visa. It adds up.
At 2%, you know what I'm saying?
2%. We could get a lot of steak for that 2%. You add that up over the year, that's at least a tomahawk or two, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the tomahawks you eat. that 40-ouncer you got that one time, I forget where we were. Was that Jeffrey? That was impressive.
Yeah.
That
you're only supposed impressive. To have 4 ounces. Let me remind you, Bob.
Yeah,
four ounces a day.
I know.
4 ounces a day. That's it.
I think I inhaled 4 ounces when we walked in here. That was it's that much in the air. And so we already ordered, and we're going to get to that in a minute. We want to talk about our guest.
Very funny guest.
Yeah, very funny guy. Very good friend of ours, Mr. Derek Richards. And he just came out with a new book called Whiskey, Cancer, and Bad Decisions.
I know he's made all three of those. Cancer he beat, which I'm happy. Yes. The other two, he's done.
Yeah, and we've made many bad decisions with whiskey and through whiskey with him over
yes.
the years.
Yes, oh, geez.
Yeah, it's going to be
stories.
Fun to have him on to talk hysterical. About his... him beating cancer.
It's awesome.
And
great story.
We're obviously very happy about that, and we'll talk about some of his credits and where he's been. But let's talk about first what we ordered. Sal, what did you get?
Well, I went with the I just went with the prime rib, man. I'm just going to get their, you know, that's their house specialty. I think, I don't know, I don't know about you, but our waiter had to be a boxer. He's got he's got a hell of a nose. You don't notice his nose? I mean, it looks like he's been in a couple of fights here for people not paying or something. No, I'm just kidding. He just looks like a boxer kind of type. But anyway,
we should ask him.
I'm afraid to.
We should ask him if he punches the raw meat in the cooler like Rocky.
Yeah, well, they got a great picture of it on the website. I don't know if you saw it. Look, they should just stick Stallone in there.
That.
Just
That's
a little
cool.
image of Stallone in there. But anyway, he told me it's really good, and he said it's like at a 14 ounces today. So I'm going to go with that. I'm going to get that dessert after, so just maybe some vegetables and go eat their bread. Their bread's really good here, and I'm enjoying. What did you get?
It's a simple menu, you know?
It is.
But everything is perfect, and I got the porterhouse, the aged porterhouse, and I ordered the gravy boat and that onion bread to come with it. And I got an iceberg wedge salad coming beforehand.
Nice. I wanted to try the sizzling bacon. It's like an appetizer.
Oh yeah.
So I got that instead of the salad.
You got to have some of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. I wonder how many pieces it comes in. I don't know if you ever like they sell them at the ballpark with like one. You ever get them down?
Yeah.
At
yeah. They're like 4 inches thick and they're.
Yeah. I don't know if that's really good bacon there.
I don't know. I've had it.
This is
going
to be good bacon.
I think I was drunk. If I was at the ballpark.
So, you know, hey, we're having a good meal before having a Thanksgiving Day meal, obviously a few days from,
mm-hmm.
from
and
now.
And it is the Thanksgiving episode.
Yes, it is a Thanksgiving episode. Definitely like us on iTunes or listening to us on any platform. And we're doing well, Bob. The show's doing well. We're chugging along, man. People are digging it.
Several thousand subscribers now.
That's
very
nice.
Happy about it. And I think it's because we're so social.
We are very, very social.
You and I are very social people.
We're on everything, you know.
And we're picking up people from, and I, you know, maybe not a bad time to say we did a little bit of research into the demographics. This is absolutely true. We have 65 listeners in India.
I'll take it.
We have 45 in Ireland. I am loving that it's worldwide. Sal and Bob have gone worldwide.
All right.
Most of the listenership is in the United States. But it is all over the world. We have
That's
China.
That's the beauty of this.
Vietnam. And I think my favorite, though, we were talking about this the other day. We got one listener in Ghana. And we're gonna have to
we
go
wanna
pay
fly him or her in.
Oh, yeah, maybe
I
that's
would.
What we should do.
I mean,
have
if there's an airport within 9 hours of that person, I'll fly him in.
Yeah. So if you are the listener in Ghana, get a hold of us. Hit
Thank
us
you.
Up on Twitter. Yeah, we appreciate it.
Are you a big the night before Thanksgiving guy? I mean, I know that's a big biggest bar night of the year. That's all I've heard
I
forever.
I had kids, and then I've got grandkids now. But I have imbibed
back
too
in
much.
The day. Yeah,
back in the day. It's the night.
Have you done gigs on that night?
I have, yeah. In fact, I wanted to say, didn't I think you and I did a gig where they didn't turn off the televisions and we had to work between periods in the hockey game?
Oh, yeah.
Was
yeah,
that
that's
the night
way
before?
Back, yeah.
I think that was.
Yeah, I think there was a hockey
what a,
game.
What a
and
nightmare.
The guy said for us
the
to just go off.
The nightmare before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and then I've done some gigs on the pre-thing. And I've also done the bar thing with my buddies and stood in line because the bars are so packed.
Yeah.
When was the last time you stood in a line outside freezing your ass off?
For a drink.
To try to get into a bar that's going to be, like, you're going to be like a sardine in there.
Yeah.
I just don't do that anymore.
No, I,
just,
no, I don't.
But do I've either. Done it, you know, because that's a big night. And then you wake up the next day, and obviously a tradition of the Lions game at 12:30. They're on at 12:30 every Thanksgiving.
Always. We put ourselves through that, being Lions fans.
I mean, it's a nationally televised game. I don't know what their record is on Thanksgiving, but it can't be good because...
No, they're a losing team in their history. So so Thanksgiving is just going to
yeah,
be
Yeah, wouldn't that be funny if they were 12-0 on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, right.
Or 60-7 on Thanksgivings.
Yeah,
and
no.
And the rest of their career is 69 and nine more wins other than Thanksgiving.
And it's always like right in the middle of the season or just past the middle of the season where the Lions are still in the hunt. So they make you watch them, right? They're a game below 500 or they're a game above. And they're just about ready to go into their swoon and break all our hearts. But we watch every year.
Yeah. No, and, I mean, I actually do a joke about that because besides the 0-16 season, you're absolutely right. They'll be 7-7 at one point.
Yeah.
Al Michaels will be doing a Sunday Night Football, put up the NFC pitcher, and all these teams need a couple things to happen for them. And then they put the Lions up. It takes up the whole screen. Looks like the chalkboard in A Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe. You know, they need Angelina and Brad to get back together again. If that happens, they make the play. MASH the musical has to come out. It's always crazy.
I know, but, and they never do it. They get no. And you brought up a good point one time. They get like 9 out of 10.
Yeah,
but the 10th one,
we need Cleveland to beat New England by 37
right.
points.
Right? Yeah, they just know that just can't be managed. Fate will not let that happen. So
one of these years we'll go 13-3 and not have to worry about it.
I just, you know what, buddy? When they do, dinner is on me for a week.
If the Lions won the Super Bowl, do you really think there'd be cars on fire downtown and all that kind of stuff like happened in Chicago when the Cubs won?
No, I don't think so. I think the city would be in such a state of shock, nobody would be able to move. No, you know what I mean?
We'd all look like zombies out there because we didn't know what just happened.
What?
That's funny.
What was that? I mean, it's so far beyond my ability to, get a mental picture of because it's just, I mean, there's such losers for so long.
We have a guest today, Bob.
We do.
Yeah.
It's our buddy, Derek Richards.
Derek Richards is in the house, a Las Vegas comedian, part of the Irish Comedy Tour. He is now an author of a book called Whiskey, Cancer, and Bad Decisions that is out now on paperback. How you doing, Derek?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Just had a big meal here at Peter Luger's, and we thought we'd give you a shout and talk to you for a few minutes about your book, man. How are things going out in Vegas these days?
No, it's going great, man. I got my Sal and Bob podcast mug over here.
Thank you for that.
I think I told. No problem. And you know, I appreciate it because you guys had thrown a post out there on your Twitter account saying, you know, hey, we're looking for creative things that you can do with our mug, and I think I won because I said I would put a big mug of hot water in it, and I would lower my sack over it and steam the wrinkles out.
He did say that.
Can you put a picture of that on Twitter, please?
No, I'm not. That's
ding, ding,
you know,
ding. We have a winner.
It's better to just let the imagination run wild.
Man, you must be doing squats at the Snap Fitness for you to crouch that low and do that for us. We appreciate it.
No, that's just a big-ass mug. I appreciate it because my balls are huge.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that and for plugging our show wherever you're at. But, hey, wanted to have you on and talk about this book, man. I think it's awesome. So for those of you listening that might not know, Derek Richards is a comedian of over 20 years. He's a regular out in Las Vegas at Brad Garrett's and the D Casino. He's done cruise ships throughout his career. He does corporate stuff. He's part of the Irish Comedy Tour. But besides, and it's a really cool book. It's about how you overcame cancer in 1998 when you were 32 years old. But tell us a little bit about what else is in this book, man. What do you got going on here, Derek?
Well, it is my personal story about being a 19-year cancer survivor from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Nice.
And it's a... I've read stories about people having gone through bad stuff and cancer. I mean, everybody knows somebody who has it, and a lot of people, go through this every single day. And for me, what I wanted to do was tell the story through the prism of a comedian going through something like this. And for me, it was just cancer kind of topped a very dark period in my life. I had a 2-year stretch where I lost my dad in a car accident, and also my grandmother and grandfather had passed away, whom I was very close to. And then literally the last thing within this 2-year stretch was me getting diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Wow. And it was just it was just one of those times. I mean, it sucked, and it's one of those things where it was a bad situation for me. I know people go through things that are a lot worse than that, but for me, this was just my own little personal hell that I was going through. And the whole idea behind the book was to try to tell this story with have a comedic spin on such a topic like cancer. And
sure.
It really kind of takes people on the story up through my diagnosis, through my treatment, through the recovery process and everything. And it's really how it kind of helped change everything about how I view life now. And I tell everybody, I go, cancer was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it really kind of puts everything in perspective. You just don't find yourself worrying about stuff that's so petty and that, seems to get under everybody's, skin today. And, it really just kind of reshapes your mindset on just how you look at life.
That's good stuff. And I always, talk to people about this. Like, being a comedian, for what you went through back then, and I think you told a story about where you were at one of the clubs where you had just gone to the doctor and you were diagnosed, and you were at, I think it was the Holly Hotel, you told the story to me. But what I want to tell people out there is, it's bad enough what you went through, but if you're like a plumber or you're a dentist, you're going to work and you're kind of blocking that part of your life out. But when you have to be funny every day,
yeah,
on stage, and you're going through that shit, how was that, man? Can you talk about that just for a few seconds?
Well, it was tough, yeah, because I was diagnosed. I got the phone call from the doctor, and at like 4:45 in the afternoon on a Friday, and I had to go. Yeah, I had to go work this gig in Holly, Michigan, that weekend, and it was just I've always been able to. It's been funny now because I've been able to compartmentalize stuff. And I mean, I did a show the night my dad died, and it was one of those things where I just needed to not have my head in that space. I needed to throw myself into something else, and I needed a distraction. And it was extremely difficult to do when my dad had passed away, and then the cancer diagnosis. It was tough. But I'm like, it's always been trying to find a way to laugh at something, trying to find a way to find the humor in any kind of a situation, whether it's, death or, in this case, a cancer diagnosis. So it was a huge range of emotion going over there and doing the show. And I mean, I'll be honest, you know, it didn't help that the, you know, the gig itself in Holly sucked. So, you know, I go there.
Yeah.
And it was in January, and it was, you know, I go there, and it's like the heat was out downstairs, and you guys have both done this gig, and it's for those that are listening, I mean, it's in the basement of an old restaurant, you know, big
it's
house.
It's the Eva Braun wing of the Holly Hotel.
It really is. I mean, it's well, because like they got the, if you go there, you go downstairs, and it's like where you would, you know, film parts of Hostel or Saw.
Saw.
And you know, you put like, you know, little Taiwanese boys down there that you were human trafficking, and it's just, you guys have been there and you worked the gig, so you don't need to say anything. I don't work there anymore, so fuck it, I don't care. But it's, you know, you go down there, and I'm like, all right, I need this distraction. I just got diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so, you know, I go down there, and there's no heat. It's January in Michigan, so it's 20 degrees outside. It's 21 degrees inside. And I'm in there, you know, with the girl I was seeing at the time, and, you know, she's all upset, obviously.
Wait, hold up, 1 minute. Listen, we're right in the middle of a very poignant story. But I need to interrupt you. In the middle of all this hurricane, this maelstrom of horrible news, you brought a date?
Well, hey,
yeah,
man's got to have what a man's got to have.
You had just started dating her, is what you said.
I am not going to give up pussy just because I got diagnosed with cancer.
Good answer.
You guys can both go to hell.
Okay, so yeah. finish your thought, Derek.
No, it was I was actually dating her at the time, so it wasn't like this was a Tinder hookup and I dragged her out there after my cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
So it was
a Bumble hookup.
I was seeing her at the time, and so we end up you know, showing up out there, and it's in the opening act. You know, he's literally going on stage in his winter jacket and mittens.
No.
Holding the microphone.
Jeez.
And my date and I are in the back of the room, like two homeless people outside of the old Tiger Stadium, huddling over the cocktail candle trying to stay warm.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man.
And so, really, if not for nothing, it was really a brilliant distraction to... So what I did was I took my cancer diagnosis and I found something worse than cancer, and I decided to work the Holly Hotel in January. And so all of a sudden, cancer didn't seem like it was that big of a deal.
Now, the title of the book is Whiskey, Cancer, and Bad Decisions. Obviously, so happy for you for, you know, beating cancer. But the whiskey and the bad decisions. Now, I haven't read the book yet. This has recently come out. I'm in the book. I'm honored to be in it. There's a picture of me on one of the pages with myself, you, and Kevin Kramus, and I'm like, I got my arms out like I'm Ben Hur or something, and you guys are behind me looking like you're, you know, 8 Jameson shots to the wind, and but I'm happy to be in it. But so, what are the whiskey and the bad decisions? Are these? Do you just tell stories about just some of the crazy gigs like you just explained to us, or just some bad decisions you made? And is that what else is in the book?
Well, what kind of goes in there is I talk about some of the things, because during that 2-year stretch, it was a very dark time. And after I got diagnosed with the cancer, you know, I was in a really, really bad spot. And
sure.
I was just, you know, coming off of the loss of, you know, 3 of the closest people in my life, and now having this, and that, you get your health yanked out from underneath you on top of all this other stuff that's happening. And, you know, my comedy approach on stage was just very angry, and I was pissed off at life. I was pissed off at God. I was pissed off at everybody, because I just couldn't believe that all of this shit was happening to me at the time. And I understand it's life, but it was just, as I put in the book, it was a lot of life crammed into a very small window. And you kind of go back and you start thinking about things that, you know, things that you've done in your life. That's where the bad decisions came in, where you're going, all right, is this karma coming back and biting me in the ass? Okay, here's your cancer diagnosis because you were a douchebag, you know, through the years. And so you start kind of going and you start replaying stuff in your life.
Sure.
And you're you're watching the video of shit that you've done and the people that might have hurt, the actions that you've taken, and just bad decisions that you've made, and you're wondering, because you can't help but think, you're like, why? And anybody that gets sick or experiences stuff like this, they're like, why is this happening to me? So it just kind of, you know, you go through and just replay some things and try to, you know, make sense of what's going on in your life now and how it all unfolded the way that it did.
By the way, we should say, Derek and Sal and I have been, we've spent many a nights consuming lots of liquor and talking about the missteps we've made here and there. So this is good to have you on, buddy, and to talk about a success. I mean, you know, you're already a success, but this book is great, and you know, it's great that, you know, the Irish comedy tour is killing it. All your dates in Vegas and all the stuff you do around the country, we're real proud of you, man.
No, it's always it's great to hang out with you guys. It's always a blast to get together and throw some steaks on the grill and drink way too much whiskey and kill some brain cells and laugh about stuff. It's always a great time hanging out with you, and it's always great to get Sal out here in Vegas. And now we need to coordinate it when we can get you out here at the same time that Sal comes out.
Oh yeah, man,
that'll be a good time.
We got to get that done before the holidays. Yeah, it's too bad you couldn't be here with us at Peter Luger's today. We're having a great time. You'd enjoy this place.
Oh, my God.
Now, there's many steakhouses out there in Vegas, Derek. Which one do you like out there? Any particular steakhouse?
I know you and I went to the Golden Steer, the one that I like, and you're going to laugh, and it is a phenomenal steakhouse. And it is the steakhouse at Circus.
Yeah, that's who you told
now,
me. I've been there years ago. Yeah,
Circus.
They do. They got an award-winning steakhouse there.
Really? Do you get a balloon with it?
You got to go through.
It's one of those things. Yeah, you go through there, and it's like you're going, because Circus is, for those of you that are not familiar, the listeners, it is a, how can I put this best, shithole.
It is.
Yeah.
It's like if the comedy club at the Holly Hotel put in slot machines.
Listen, Johnny Ettinger better not hear this, or Sal and I are never going to get booked there again.
This is all me. This is all me. Sal and I have nothing to say. We're laughing. But Circus is just an awful, disgusting place. I mean, you walk through there, and it's just... Your feet stick to the floor. It's just DNA and piss, and you're like, "What am I doing here? This is awful." It's just vile. And you're walking through, and there's a bunch of Mexicans with their 35 kids walking up and down the hallway, and you're thinking, "How am I possibly going to get a good meal out of this experience?" And you walk into the steakhouse at Circus, and it is literally like you are walking through a It's like you walk through a mirror in Alice in Wonderland. It's just, the place is classy. It's classic, old, dark wood Vegas feel to it. Very old school. A great lounge. The food, the steaks are incredible. Seafood, just awesome.
Highly
recommend.
That's crazy. So when you're waiting for a table, do you got to wait on one of the horse merry-go-rounds outside the steakhouse? Is that how you wait for your table?
No. You can, I suppose. I wouldn't recommend that, but, you know, if you're a thrill seeker, knock yourself out.
That's like the greatest description of the juxtaposition of what Vegas is. You got this crappy, broken down Circus casino with this awesome steakhouse inside. You know, it's like Sal, you do a great joke about Luxor.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like the grandeur of the pyramids, you know, in Giza, with Carmine the pit boss. You know, it's just these things just don't
well
it's a great way to talk. That sums up that city.
Yeah, but,
you know,
but see, now what Derek just talked about was like walking through the Circus and you're just, you know, dirty carpeting, your feet are sticking, and then you go to this beautiful steakhouse in the back. Well, have you ever walked through Casino Royale and done the same thing? Then there's only a Subway in the back of the place. I've done that walk at 3:30 in the morning.
Did you do the walk of shame after hitting the ATM? I've done that a few times in Vegas.
ATM, I go right to the window and get the credit card signature for $2,500.
Yeah. Oh, good for you.
I'm just kidding.
Again, yeah, I should have put you in the chapter in bad decisions in the book.
Oh, geez. No,
the
three
of us are walking bad decisions. That's
so
yes, we are.
But, Derek, you're on our Thanksgiving week episode. That's kind of been our theme for the show. Do you have any, before we get you out of here, thank you for your time, do you have any great Thanksgiving Day stories? Anything crazy happened to you on Thanksgiving or that week or anything?
Well, this goes back a few years when I was married, so it's been divorced now for 6 years, and so it's got to be at least maybe 10, 11 years ago, and I was married at the time, and my ex-mom and dad came down, and my ex-in-laws were just the devil. I mean, just the Prince of Darkness and his sidekick, and they came down, and they had money, but they're the people that would want to stay with you at your house. We just had a two-bedroom condo with them. And my ex-mother-in-law was just insufferable. She was good for about a day and a half, and then, I don't know if her medications just didn't kick in properly, but she just turned into the biggest flame-throwing thunder snatch you've ever seen in your life. And so we're there. So it's Thanksgiving, you know, this magical holiday, you know, go pilgrims. And so I make Thanksgiving dinner, and she's just now becoming just that insufferable shrew. And my ex told me, she goes, I'm telling you, my mom is going to lose her mind. We're stuck with her here at the house. She goes, if she starts acting like an idiot, I'm going to crush up a Xanax and put it in her coffee, in her decaf. And so we had this all planned out. And at first, you know, I'm like, all right, I'll do it. You know, you distract them, I'll take care of it. Then I'm thinking, all right, I don't want to be an accessory to murder if this Xanax in the decaf reacts with, you know, the trash bag of meth that she brings with her. She's already over 70 years old. I mean, she was just literally, you know, just full of every kind of heart medication, diabetes medication, I mean, you name it, everything. And I'm like, I'm not going to, you know, tag this, you know, killing her. I watch Law and Order. So push comes to shove. We're losing our minds. And my wife goes, you got to do this. I go, I can't do it. And she goes, just take them out on the balcony. I got it. So I take my in-laws out on the balcony. I'm looking back inside. We're living in Florida at the time. So I'm looking inside. And all I see is my ex-wife, the vision of her, crushing up this Xanax on...
Jeez.
And we literally tested the solubility of crushed up Xanax in coffee to make sure that it wouldn't float to the top because she drank the coffee black.
You're like, what are you, Cosby?
So, I know. No, we were Cosby before Cosby was Cosby. And so my ex grinds up the Xanax, puts in the coffee, and I have a mother-in-law who's down. Drinking the coffee, and I mean literally this stuff acted, because she doesn't take any kind of a sleeping medication, and this stuff acted almost in real time, and it was hysterical. I mean, her eyes, she just started looking like a little kid that was at the county fair that had it for the day. Just the eyes were kind of sagging, and she wanted to stay awake, but she couldn't stay awake.
Oh,
and so she just kept saying, and she's from North Carolina, and they all talk with Target over there anyway. And she's like, well, I'm just tired. I'm just darn tired. I don't know if I'm going to go to sleep. It's still early for Thanksgiving. I'm just so tired. And thank God, she ended up hitting the bed with all her clothes on, face first, drool coming out of her. She was gone for like 14 hours. It was the most peaceful 14 hours.
Oh, that is great.
That you could imagine.
I got a question for you.
That's awesome.
During that 14 hours, did you and your wife, like, do it? Did you do it?
Like Beavis and Butthead all of a sudden?
Well, yeah. Her dad was still awake, Bob, so he ran the camera while I dropped the hammer on her on the couch.
Oh, that's an awesome story, man. Well, hey, Derek, thanks for joining us, man. For those of you listening, Whiskey, Cancer, and Bad Decisions, available now.
Great book.
On paperback and a paperback. And also check out Derek's website, DerekRichards.com. Plays out at the D Casino a lot. He's out at Brad Garrett's. He's does some stuff in the Midwest, follows Irish Comedy Tour. Thanks for joining us, Derek. Appreciate it, man.
You guys are awesome, man. Take care. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right. You too, buddy.
We'll see you, Derek.
All right, everybody. That's it for the Sal and
I'm
Bob
so
show.
I'm so glad we had this time together.
Me too. That was a great Carol Burnett impression. Way to go, buddy. So, yeah, this is goodbye from Peter Luger in New York City. And we're going to take you out
Brooklyn,
with a little bit more of Adam Sandler's Thanksgiving song. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Sal, as always,
absolutely,
great being
man.
With you.
Great to be here with you, man.
Gobble, gobble, boo, and gobble, gobble, giggle. I wish turkey only cost a nickel. Oh, I love turkey on Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Thank you.